Thank you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show host and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
Hey, everybody. I wanted to welcome everyone to Live Paranormal Radio's Something Evil, a true crime show. I am one of your hosts, Rob Zarek, and my other host, Nikki, is hopefully there. Nikki, you there?
Yep, I'm here.
That's great. We're starting off well. So we're doing a special tonight, which we're going to incorporate into Live Paranormal Radio as part of our regular Tuesday production. Something Evil, a true crime radio show. And I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah, definitely. Me too.
You know, it's something that, you know, it comes about in a lot of what we do. And I know we both have a general interest in the topic, and you really love watching these shows and, you know, getting immersed in the stories, and I really enjoy hearing you talking about them, because I know you follow a lot of the cases and do research, and, you know, like we talked the other night, you gave me like a 15-minute rundown on this case in Maryland, and it was like if you were writing a documentary, you had it all like memorized. It was I was quite impressed.
Well, it hit home. It was, you know, close to home, so it kind of piqued my interest even more so.
Well, and I think that, you know, with our paranormal investigations and stuff, there are a lot of times that we come across, you know, the true crime scenario, or, you know, something or someone that's evil. And, you know, so I think it's a general play into something we already come across all the time.
Definitely. There's a connection.
There's definitely a crossover.
I think.
You know, and I do too. And I think that, you know, we've been on tons of paranormal investigations where we've, you know, gone to places that, you know, there's been a murder or some sort of crime that's ended in death. And, you know, we don't necessarily make contact with, you know, the people involved, but there is the premise of us being there due to that fact.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think that's what's, you know, one thing that we, is kind of a staple of our post-investigation wrap-up is, you know, watching the true crime documentaries and television shows. And it's been like that for years.
Yeah.
And that's what's really interesting about tonight's guest is it seemed to me that we had stumbled across the episode of his story, I don't know how many times. It was just like
many times.
You know, many. And it was like a series of events, which, you know me, I don't really believe in like coincidences and, oh, it was meant to be. But it seemed like over like a 3-day period, I stumbled across either things that pertain to his case or him in general. And I sent him an email, and within like, it was not long. He had already responded. Was like, yeah, I'm game for being on your show. And so, like, it was like clockwork that it all came together. So I think let's just go ahead and bring him on And, yeah, I didn't even tell him that. I just was like, hey, do you want to be on the show? He said yes. And I think we'll have to tell him the series of events that led up to, you know, having him, on tonight.
But yeah.
All right, so tonight's guest, Collier, are you there?
I am here, brother. How are you? How's your shoulder?
It's not too bad. You know, it's a partially torn, I think, rotator. And I've had, like, a series of crazy events over the last, like, 5 years with a bunch of weird injuries. And none of them are cool. Like, you know, I don't have any, like, great, amazing stories. They're all, like, really boring and, like, yeah, go figure that happened to you. Like, I had two major leg mm-hmm. injuries over the last 5 years, and, like, I broke my hip carrying my kids out to the car. I slipped on ice. You know, in the Ohio black ice, it'll get you. And,
oh, God.
Then from that point forward, my knee exploded about a year and a half ago, and I was just taking a leap down from a trampoline, fixing it for my kids. And like I said, nothing good. I wish I had like some kind of cool, like bar fight story or saving the world type of thing, but it's not nothing. So,
well, No, go ahead. Sorry.
I say, I think it's predetermined that I'm going to have a stupid death. It's going to be like, Nicole, she read, like, there was an article of obituary. Someone died, like, playing ping pong. And I'm like, yeah, that's totally how I'm going mm-hmm. out. Something completely stupid.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. I love it. I'm also now thoroughly very, very, very happy with the decision that I don't have kids right now, because I do enough to try to injure myself, but I just, you know, a broken hip, man. Ooh,
mm-hmm.
Forget about it.
Well, and I narrowed it down to just those. Think what it is. It's just trying to help people in general is where my problem lays. Like, so I was carrying my kids out to the car, trying to help, you know, get them their playground equipment set up during COVID. And then I didn't even mention the fact that, like, I had torn my calf muscle in between, and that was dropping Nikki off, and it was pouring out, and we were going into a location or a place, and I dropped her off in front, went and parked, and realized that it was a little bit longer of a distance than I thought, and it was a pouring rain. And so I started to run a little bit, and I got, like, 4 steps into it, and I heard this pop, and my calf muscle popped. So it's been, like,
yeah.
I think basically just the moral,
I've been there.
The moral of my story is always fend for yourself and never help anybody, because it doesn't lead to anything good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, so so the calf thing is weird. By the way, sorry. Nikki, it is nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you,
wow,
too.
Wow, it is nice to meet you, too. Yes.
Yes, yes.
I also tore my ligaments in my calf, but this is a great story. So I ride motorcycles, and I was in between gigs. Let's see, so just a little background, you know, I'm a filmmaker. I live in Hollywood. I'm a cinematographer. I was doing these commercial jobs, and I was returning some gear, and there's an area of Los Angeles called Mount Washington, which is on the east side, and I'm riding my mm-hmm. Triumph up the hill, and I'm at the top of the hill, and then there's another part of the hill that goes up, and it's a very steep angle. And I'm thinking to myself, I probably shouldn't ride up because it was a really narrow road. I don't know how I'm going to turn the bike around. And mm-hmm. I was getting ready to do another job with these guys that flew in for this horror film from the UK. They had never met me before, except for the day before. And the night before that, I had contracted really bad asthmatic bronchitis, and I had to go to the hospital. So my first phone call to them was like, hey, I'm going to meet you tomorrow. I know that I have all the gear, that you paid for all this stuff, and that you flew to the United States to work with me. But don't worry, I'm in the hospital, and it's a quarter after midnight, but I'm going to be there for tomorrow's meeting. So already, and I'm calling some actress's phone number because they had like a loaner phone they were using, so I couldn't even get a hold of anyone. I show up, and then, you know, we have our meeting, and everybody's great. Everybody's gung ho. Okay, cheers, mate. Go on. Next morning, I'm getting ready to start that gig, and I have to drive out to the middle of the desert about 4 hours away from L.A. I'm returning the sound equipment. I ride the motorcycle up, and I, of course, lay it down just very gently, and I'm like, oh, I turn around, you idiot. You knew better than this. I call the guy who I'm dropping the sound gear off to. He comes outside, and I'm like, hey, I'm going to push this bike up. I push the bike up, and I just feel this whack right in the back of my left calf, and I'm like, oh, my God, I think I just tore my Achilles. And I put the bike sort of falls down. It's like a 450-pound bike. And then he looks at me, and he goes, he heard it pop, and he runs inside and grabs some ibuprofen. He comes out. I must have taken 12 of them immediately. And we turn the bike around, and I'm like, I'm in so much pain. I'm like, okay, this is not good. And I return the gear. I go to my office studio where somebody's coming to load in the gear with me to drive out to this desert location. The location we were shooting at is where they filmed the movie with John Cusack called Identity. If you guys have ever seen it, it's this random hotel. It's in the middle of nowhere, and it has no power. You have to bring your own power. Oh, so I was bringing all this gear. I was working as a gaffer, which is a lighting guy. And I have all the equipment, and my friend is literally helping me load the stuff into a truck while I'm literally hobbling, and my leg is starting to turn black and blue. And I'm like, he's like, dude, you can't walk. You got to go to the hospital. I'm like, I can't leave these people in the middle of the desert. They're in the middle of the desert with no cell reception. So we're driving to the location, and it's in the middle of the desert, and I keep trying to get a hold of this actress's phone number. I say, I leave them a message. I'm like, hey, mate, this is Collier again. Going to be about 20 minutes late. I tore my calf muscle, and I can't walk, but I'm in the car, and I'm in the truck, and we've got all the equipment, and I will be there. So then they're trying to call me, but we're in the middle of the desert, and we're not getting reception. And I show up, and there's the entire crew, actors, everything. They're all standing out in front of the hotel because they're paranoid. They're like, okay, we just spent all this money because the location was like $20,000 or something for the day. It was insane. Mm-hmm. And they're all standing outside, and I get out of the truck, and I have what's called a C-stand arm, which is a piece of equipment we use, and it's this metal arm, and I'm using it as a cane. I've never, you know, I haven't met the other half of the crew yet and the actors, and I'm like, hi, I'm Collier, and we worked for 2 days straight, and I'm literally, I have photos of it on my Instagram. I've got my, like, leg propped up, and I'm, like, directing them, and I'm, like, doing this, but by the end of the shoot, they're like, you're legend, mate. Like, you're nuts, and then they find out about the film I had just made, A Murder in Mansfield, and they're just like, you're a god. Like, what? Like, who are you? You're literally like, and they were just like, you didn't. And the moral of the story is I was also trying to help people, but I didn't let them down. They were just like, anybody else would have just been like, I'm done. I'm going to the hospital or whatever. Luckily, one of the actors that was on set that was hired in America happened to be an orthopedic or something. He was in therapy, and he checked me out while he was there. He was playing like a killer or something, And he's like, he rocked up in his, like, expensive-ass Mercedes, and I'm like, oh, okay. And he's like, yeah, he's like, if you tore the muscle, your Achilles is fine, which I knew the Achilles was fine because I could walk, or put weight on it. But he's like, if you tore the muscle, you wouldn't be able to walk, but you definitely popped all your ligaments. And I'm like, okay, because I'm like, it felt like I got hit with a baseball bat in the back of my calf. So anyways, all that to say that I can relate to your story with an even better story.
Yeah, man. That is a much better story. I mean, to like just clarify, like mine. After our investigation, there was like a little like casino, and we stopped at the casino. Uh-huh. And I like I said, it was pouring. It was like one of the worst electrical storms in Pennsylvania history.
It was
like
crazy.
People still talk about it. It was insane. And I made it like 5 steps, and I had that pop, and I was standing there in the middle of the, like, the parking lot. And the sad part was for her, not as much for me. She had to come out and get me. And so, like, in the downpour. You know,
yeah.
And then basically, there was a slot machine right when you walk in. And I sat on that slot machine for, like, 3 hours and just waited.
I got
for
you
more.
Ice.
She's just like, all right. Yeah, she got me ice, and she's like, I'll be back. And I was like, okay, thank you. You know, and I'm stuck in, like, it was – like a Uniontown, Pennsylvania.
It's like,
which back in the day, Uniontown was like, up. You know, that was the place to go to. But like in that was like in the teens, 19 teens.
Right.
You know, not necessarily. You know, 100 years later.
20
teens. I think Yeah. I think they had like maybe a Pittsburgh branch, like of the, what is it, UMPC? I don't even know what the whatever their Pittsburgh medical thing is. So I didn't even bother going. I just waited to come back and go to Cleveland Clinic. But yeah, your story is much better. I don't have a good story.
Yeah.
But one thing I did wanted to mention, and it seems like we have a ton in common, which is kind of funny, but yet also
not
plays off
injuries.
The fact that not just injuries. You know, we both have. It seemed like you sent me the image of your podcast, and it's at the Ohio State Reformatory, and we have our thing that we're circulating from the Ohio State Reformatory. And then it was weird. You know, it seemed like on our investigations, on like post investigation, you know, it's like 3-4 in the morning, and there's not much to watch other than like infomercials or like crime television, and you know, true crime and you know, stories like that, and. You, the episode of your story was on maybe like every time for like the
now, was that
month.
Forensic Files?
Yes, we feel like we know you. We've seen it so many times.
And she's like, "What's on?" And I'd always be like, "Oh, it's that kid from Mansfield and Erie again." And you know, that's the fact that. You know, in the episode, you're a kid, you know, and I think we're probably similar in age, but yet, you know, you're the kid from the show. And so, you know, we had that episode on. And then the funny thing is, you know, we do our stuff in Mansfield, and then we actually had a production in Erie. So it was like, really, we did an event in Erie for years. And, you know, that was like, I was like, well, that's really weird. Like, the cities are coincidental. And, you know, like really four straight nights of investigating that the episode was on. And this was over like a couple month period. And then I for a weird present, like, you know, we're into the paranormal stuff. So if we buy something for each other, it's normally like strings. You know, so I was looking for like old wanted photo posters and stuff on eBay. And I stumbled across, and this wasn't just on a weird coincidence, is that somebody was selling a like a scrapbook with all the newspaper clippings from your case. And I was like, well, that's weird. How
really?
Did this come up like from, yeah, it was like maybe like 40 pages or something. It was like someone took the time to cut out all the, like all the articles and had like all of this information put into a scrapbook. I did not get it. But I thought it was strange. I was like, well, that's, you know, I was like, I can't believe it's that, you know, that case. And then, like the next day I had logged on to TikTok, which we started, you know, putting our evidence on TikTok, and you were on, like, you came on my feed, and I was like, what are the odds, you know? And so then I just was like, yeah, this is bizarre. You know, this is like the third or fourth thing that came in front of me that was you in like, one or two days. And I'm not like in the know or spend a lot of time on the internet or be like, you know, the person that would, you'd say, oh, that's because you spend a lot of time online or you do this or that. You know, it was just truly almost beyond coincidental. And then I sent you a message and within like an hour, we had it all wrapped up. It was just like the most bizarre series of events.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
That led to, you know, having you on tonight. And you know, as we had mentioned in our, you know, startup, there is a lot of crossover between what we do, you know, and stories like yours.
Sure.
You know, we stumble across that all the time, you know, and obviously when it comes to shooting documentaries and shooting, you know, stuff that are, you know, it's somewhat like an attention grabber. If there is a, you know, a case or something that, you know, is known nationally, you know, that does draw attention, especially when we come in, you know, so, you know, there is that we stumble across it all the time.
Definitely.
That's, you know, it's very, very, very eerie, but, you know, it's, you know, something that we're very interested in and well versed in. So, you know, I guess talking about, you know, everything that transpired, and how you turned it into a positive, and even been able to put that, you know, your podcast out there and turn it into something that, you know, is a positive. It's something that should be very, you know, inspirational for people. And I know it's very inspirational for us.
Well, thank you for saying that. I appreciate that. It's great when people, you know, I get that feedback because, you know, the podcast Moving Past Murder is sort of the, I always wanted to do a podcast and, you know, I made the film A Murder in Mansfield, which is on Investigation Discovery, or IV as the true crime people call it. And mm-hmm. I wanted to continue telling the story, raising awareness, and I just, you know, and show people that you can go through, you know, extraordinary circumstances, defy seemingly insurmountable odds, and come out on the other side. Mm-hmm. You know, you got your bumps and your bruises, and maybe, you know, a banged up calf muscle that got torn, but, you know, you're all right. You're going to be okay. And, you know, that has kind of really, you know, inspired and motivated me and been like sort of the torch that I've been carrying, I guess. And, you know, I was doing another interview and everybody said, you know, what is it like to do all this? And, you know, how long, you know, have you always had a passion for this? And I was like, you know, I realized the other day I have not taken my foot off the gas since I was 11 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this has just been something that I've done the majority of my life, you know, mm-hmm. since I was 11, you know, almost 12 when the murder occurred, when I heard it happen, you know, and then the subsequent investigation, nobody listening to me except for one detective, David Messmore, and ultimately the, you know, me finding the photo of the house, which is where they dug my mother's body up underneath the basement floor in Erie, Pennsylvania, you know, another state over.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's, you know, and then, you know, I was abandoned by both sides of my family because I looked like my father to my mother's side of the family. They hated him, and my father's side of the family said, "You're putting us in prison." I went into the foster care system. And then I just mm-hmm. sort of had to have the courage to testify against my father, which I did for 2 days of trial, and he is still incarcerated to this day. And there you have it.
Yeah.
And it's just,
well,
in a nutshell, that's not all.
And that's the one thing that, you know, I think always struck us and stuck with us and why I kind of paid more attention to the story is just the fact of your age and the way mm-hmm. that you handled it from what way it was portrayed in a way that, it's factual because they showed, like, the clips and stuff. It's amazing to me that someone would have that kind of composure at your age.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting because when I made the film, you know, obviously there is a lot of, you know, in the film you see the whole thing with the psychologist that I talked to, who was like a first responder at my school when this happened because he was mm-hmm. working with some kids there. And then I come into, you know, my mother's body is found; it's all over the place. It's a fiasco in this small town of Mansfield, Ohio, right? And mm-hmm. you know, it's a circus, rather a fiasco and a circus. And then you have, scenario where this kid is thrown into, you know, this crazy situation. And, you know, I was kind of like on autopilot, but after making the film, I talked to so many people and they're like, "Do you understand like why you were the way you were?" And I'm like, "Well, yeah, I think it's because of the way my mother raised me." And they're like, "Yes." And the reason is because my mother treated me like a young adult, like almost like mm-hmm. a surrogate husband. Because my father was never around. He was a chronic colonizer. He was a doctor. And I didn't know that they were sort of estranged as husband and wife, even though we were under the same roof my entire life. And I spent the majority of my time with my mother. And mm-hmm. the way that she treated me as a young adult is really what ultimately became the core of my resilience. And when you treat a child that way, when they're go through this certain trauma and they're dropped from a height, and most people bounce up into like a fear state, a fight or flight state, right? And mm-hmm. what am I going to do? I bounced up into a, okay, now I'm going to use, you know, I can function. I know what's going on. I know what I heard. I'm going into action mode. Like, immediately, okay, my mother is missing, my father is like, mommy took a little vacation, I heard what I believe was her murder, now I got to get, my father's like, we're not going to call the police, we're not going to call the FBI, all this crazy shit, and I'm like, okay, well, that's great, I'm in action mode, and it really hasn't stopped, and it was, you know, but it's amazing for me, and I also blame it on the fact that, like, people are like, well, why were you so intuitive, and why did you remember so many details? And I was like, well, ultimately, this is what happens when you're the last kid in your friend group to get a Nintendo. So, my dad, like, they kind of did it to themselves in a lot of ways, because my mom just got me a Nintendo that Christmas. So, you know, I was raised, like, reading books and going to bookstores and having and listening to NPR with my dad, you know, both my parents, right? And my dad, I remember being at home, you know, on the couch watching Larry King on CNN and stuff. So it really goes back to, like, how you raise your kids. And, look, you don't want to raise your kids in this, like, sort of fear and paranoia state. But you also, you know, if it wasn't for the way that my mother treated me, like, I probably would have been it would have been a different scenario for sure. Because I was able to think on my feet. And even when I spoke to Dennis Morickis, who is the psychologist who was there, he's in the film A Murder in Mansfield. I interviewed him on the podcast recently, probably about 10 episodes ago. I believe the episode is called Surviving a Murder in Mansfield. And I talked to him and I said, what was it like when you met me that day at my school when I had just found out that my mother's body had been dug up, that my father did, that I was right, and that my father did murder my mother? And he goes, well, everyone in the school was very concerned about you. And he's like, and then I realized something. They didn't really know you. Because even though you were sad and you had just lost your mom and you were obviously clearly grieving that, he's like, you had a composure about yourself, like you knew, like you had a purpose. You knew what you needed to do next. Like, okay, Now my father's going to go on trial or whatever. Like, you know, I went into this action state, which is, you know, I've done a TED talk on this, right? And it's like when you're in trauma, it's ultimately what I feel is the thing that leads you through that in those immediate, like, first moments is having action that you can do. And it's you are able to, you're kind of like, why did this happen? Goes to, like, what's next? What now? Like, what are we going to do? Like, okay, let's get a plan together. Okay, great. We're not great, but my mother is dead. There's nothing I can do about this. My father is arrested. Okay, he needs to go to prison because he killed her. Okay, I'm going to go before the grand jury and tell them everything I know, which I did. You know, leading up to this, I told the detectives. And one of the crazy things, and I don't mean to drone on and on. I obviously love the sound of my own voice. It's a good thing I do a podcast. But they, you know, and I'm good at self-deprecating humor as well. The thing is that I'm realizing as I do this more and more, with missing persons cases, it is something where, you know, it is so crucial. Because what happens is that my mother was missing. You know, there was, you know, the police treated it as a missing persons case. And if Dave Messmore didn't listen to me, like, look, my mother is dead. My mother would never leave me. This is what happened. And ultimately being able to go to school. And when he gave me his business card, I go to school and I'm like, call Dave Messmore. And the way that I was able to sort of operate freely in my school, talking to the police detective and saying, look, this is what's going on. My father has a girlfriend, a mistress. My father has been a womanizer. My father has a proclivity for violence. He has been violent to myself and my mother for years. He has a temper. He's apoplectic with that temper. You know, he is someone who is dangerous. And my mother told me, if I ever disappear, your father had me killed. And this is what I heard. And, like, to be able to give that to an investigator in the very start of a missing persons case was invaluable. It was ultimately why my father faced justice, because if that hadn't happened, if I hadn't had that sort of safety net of going to school and saying to my principal, call this guy, here's his business card, call the man, get him down here. Like, no, I'm not going to class. You're calling. And this persistence in him saying to his police captain, you know, when they're like, why are we're not investigating a doctor. You're out of your mind. And him saying, yeah, but this kid, and also it's like, this kid won't leave me alone. This annoying little almost 12-year-old child who is very intelligent and very good at communicating will not leave me alone. And I think he was pretty much – I think that he was obviously wanted to find out what happened, but I think he was also looking out for himself because he's like, if I don't listen to this kid, he's going to haunt me for the rest of my life. You know, I mean, I'm being cheeky, but, you know, ultimately it's like I am so fortunate that Dave listened to me. I am so fortunate to be able to have had that platform, and I am still so fortunate to be able to now have a different platform to advocate for these things, to discuss these things, to discuss about trauma, non-combat PTSD, all of these situations, and share my own experiences, which I do through the podcast, not only through my personal experiences, and I share these on TikTok, which has been amazing. TikTok community is awesome. And have just really embraced me and my story. But also I share letters from my father from prison. I have 500 letters sitting under my desk. And I've probably read six of them on the course of the podcast. I'm going to be continuing reading more because it shows you inside the mind of a sociopath and a narcissist. Mm-hmm. And you have a man who's murdered his son's mother, his wife, and then is trying to gaslight his son into thinking that he did something wrong. Or that his mother deserved it, or this, I mean, it's, the insanity is just, it's next level. And
right.
The way the story just continues, even nowadays, continues to play out with what I'm doing is as I'm revisiting all of these chapters of my life and bringing them out into the foreground and into a public space on TikTok, through my podcast, you know, on social media, and sharing with them my experience, because the you know, that's the next genesis. That was the next genesis of the podcast, of the film, was to then start to share these things so other people can benefit from them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think that there's probably a large amount of people it could help in various capacities.
Uh-huh.
Even when you come to, like, there might be someone who is like you that, you know, knows something, but is not being listened to. Or maybe someone knows
mm-hmm.
something, but they're being, you know, they feel like they can't speak up. You know, so, I mean, you can play out the scenarios to many different, you know, capacities of someone that this could help. You know, and it's
absolutely,
like, shocking to think of how many stories are out there like yours that maybe were left not properly looked into.
100%. 100%. And the thing is, let's not mince words. Let's not dance around this subject. The majority of these cases where a spouse goes missing, a partner goes missing, are female. It's a domestic violence situation. It's a divorce. It's the woman that goes missing. And what mistakenly happens and people get angry about is they're like, well, the police didn't do anything. Well, the police can't do anything if no one else is there. If you tell them after a month that she's been missing for a month, what the fuck are they going to do? Like, they're
right.
Going to go,
too late.
We
like,
hope we can find something.
It's been a month.
It's like, and it's not, and also, you know, there is really a huge part of this that is, you know, you have to become that advocate because, okay, they get the missing person's case. And they don't find anything. They talk to the husband. They talk to this. Okay, we don't find anything. Something's fishy. But okay, oh what, shit. Okay, so there's a bank robbery, or there's this, and oh, this happened, and this, and then it goes. You know, it gets shoved into the pile with everything else.
Mm-hmm.
It's not because law enforcement doesn't care. It's because law enforcement has so much on their plate, and you almost
mm-hmm.
have to really become this advocate for your loved one, and
mm-hmm.
and do that because you can't rely on the system, not because the system doesn't want to help you, but because the system is so overloaded. And that's the sad truth. And that trickles on down, right? That goes from, you know, from the criminal justice system into the foster care system, into
mm-hmm.
the adoption system, into the juvenile incarceration system, which then leads to the adult incarceration incarceration system. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a vicious cycle, right? And
definitely.
It's just, you know, and the only way to break these, at least in my opinion, right? And look, I've always said, since I was a little kid, I want to be my generation's John Walsh. Like, the thing is that until we have these conversations and we keep raising awareness and we keep talking about this, we can't make any change. We can't rely on our legislators. We can't rely on this. We can't rely on companies. Unless it turns into somebody's personal profit or a corporation's personal profit, they don't give a shit. You know what I mean? But
right.
we have to be there, and we have to be active. And look, it's easier said than done. It is exhausting. It is exhausting stuff, but the more conversations you have, and when you mention, like, talking to somebody like me, when I made the film, I mean, my entire story, right, and you can interrupt me whenever you want, because I will go on and on, but when I
– No,
my whole
impetus
for moving to Hollywood, my whole mm-hmm. impetus for moving to Hollywood and to becoming a filmmaker, right? I went to music school. I went to Ohio University School of Music. I went to Oberlin Conservatory. I went for voice. I dropped out. I said, I want to go to L.A. I wanted to get out of Ohio. I wanted to go to a place where nobody knew who the fuck I was. $2,000 in my pocket, get in my car, like, go out there and make it on my own. Because so much of growing up, as you know, growing up in Ohio, it's a small state, but we have a population with 5-10 million, you know. That's a suburb in Los Angeles, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, the entire population of Los Angeles County is the size of Australia, which is a continent, not even a country, a continent. You know what I mean? So, like, I came to a place where everybody is all trying to tell their stories, and I'm like, I'm going to learn. I'm going to learn through the craft of filmmaking and to tell my story. And I learned all the things about filmmaking, and it wasn't until I met someone named John Morrissey who made a film that I was so passionate about called American History X, which I saw at a theater in 1999 in Northridge, California. And I said to my friend, whoever made that film understands the consequences of violence. Flash forward 8 years later, my girlfriend at the time comes into my office in our house in our bungalow in Hollywood and says, hey, this guy contacted me, wants to photograph me as a movie producer, and he's done all these movies. And she rattled off and she says, American History. I said, American History X. And she goes, I think so. He contacted me on MySpace of all things. And I said, get him over here. Let's talk. And we became friends. And a few years later, he was looking for a project, and he mentioned a notebook full of a binder full of newspaper clippings. I gave him a binder full of newspaper clippings. I was like, he wanted to make some stupid, silly project. And I said, no, what you want to do is something legitimate. You made American History X, man. This is what you should do. And this is a pilot for a docuseries about the consequences of violence in America. And the best news I have for you is this is my life, and I own the rights to the pilot. And he read it, and he called me the next day. He goes, are you fucking kidding me, man? Like, this is your life? Because everyone knew out here that, like, my small circle of friends knew the very basics. My dad killed my mom. That was it. And I'm from Ohio. That was it, you know? Nothing. And unless, you know, you talk about that Forensic Files episode, I remember the first time that I saw it, I was on a date with a girl, and she's flipping through the channels, and that picture of that kid on the witness stand, talking on the witness stand, she flips through the channels, I see it, I'm like, oh shit, that's me. She's flipping, she stops, she looks over at me on the couch, or laying in her bed, and she's like looking at me, and then she flips back, and then it's like me on the witness stand, because I have these unmistakable blue eyes, they were my mother's, and she's looking at me, and I'm like, yeah, that's me. Kind of told you I had a message. She was like, her mind was blown. And I'm like, great. yeah, here we are. But, like, nobody knew my story. And so then I would tell my friends that I was working with, and people, I'm like, look, I'm going to tell my story. I've got this great life story. I'm going to make it into a film. And everybody's like, yeah, yeah, you and every other person
right.
comes to this town. And then I didn't tell anyone. And I'm like, yeah, I'm doing it. And they're like, yeah, 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 whatever. And then all of a sudden the movie comes out. They're like, and it's directed by 2-time Oscar winner Barbara Koppel, who's won 2 Oscars for documentaries. She is very successful, very well respected in the film community, in the documentary community. Mm-hmm. She's a legend. And they literally look at me and they're like, oh, you actually did what you said you were going to do. And I'm like, well, yeah, like, this is my whole purpose. You know, and I set out to make the film for 2 reasons. One is because I wanted to tell my mother's story, to share my mother's story. And the second thing is there's that was just like me in foster care, has lost the one person that could make everything better for them, and they're gone from this earth. They have nobody. on their side. No family support, no nothing. And you're staring in the nadir of your life where you have to testify against a monster. And your life is already ruined. And the other option is this man doesn't get convicted and comes back and ruins the rest of this life that you may have. And it's you against him. And we're in a foot race. And I knew that, like, I had to find the courage and the fortitude to testify against my father. I testified at trial for 2 days. And I wanted to speak to that kid who, I would get a little emotional, but that kid who didn't have anyone for them and say, look, man, it's going to be okay. And the thing that I found in doing this the majority of my life is that people who come through unspeakable trauma often find themselves with a fire that burns inside of them that is almost unextinguishable. And that is what drives them. And that's what drove me.
That's amazing.
So that's, yeah, and you could see the passion that you've had throughout the years. And what I read, and you know, just it's amazing and very inspirational, like we said before. And you know, I wish I feel like we could have a 3 hour podcast.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Like an hour live show. We could, there's so much we could talk about. You know,
for sure.
You know, we could bounce around between the good, the bad, and even the silly, and because that's all, you know, we're always good for that. You know, and I don't even know how much you are interested in what, you know, we do when it comes to the paranormal stuff. But it's funny you mentioned OU. That's actually where I got my start in paranormal investigating. Because, you know, that's a really, really haunted town.
Athens?
You know, yeah, Athens. Mm-hmm. That's where I went.
I mean, no, I'm saying Athens is it has a whole little thing to it, for sure.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, with the cemeteries and, you know, it's in the shape of a pentagram, like the cemetery, the way they're all laid out and stuff. And then, you know, back
crazy.
In the day, we'd stumble upon maybe, you wouldn't use the word breaking in, but I guess maybe like you'd happen to wander in to a couple areas not to be named. But I guess now that they're actually functioning, they're part of the art department now, I think.
Oh, wow.
I'm not going to name them, but I know that they're actually turned into offices now over at the – I think they may or may not be called the Ridges. But that's kind of how – I don't know what years you went there, but I haven't been there in a long time, so.
I have not been to Athens in a long time. It was funny because I was in this true crime meetup here in Los Angeles not too long ago, and there's a casting director. I'll be honest, I met her a few years ago. I shot a pilot that she cast, and I thought, no, she's really cute. And we're talking, and I said something about Athens, and she goes, Georgia or Ohio? And I said, no, Ohio. And she goes, did you go to OU? And we ended up realizing that we literally had mutual friends. We probably knew each other back then. And we went to school at the same time, and it was like, oh, that's crazy and weird and random, you know, and you're a true crime podcaster, and this is super interesting. But, yeah, Athens is a cool place, but I have not been back in, ages, man. Court Street Shuffle, you know?
Great. I actually lived at the end of Court Street. There was a bar called The Greenery, and right after The Greenery was where the street that I lived on. I lived on one half rose.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, yeah, I know exactly where you're at.
So, I don't know. What years were you there?
So, I was there from, 96 to 98. And then I left and went to Oberlin for, a year and then left.
I was there from 97 to 98. And then I went to Hocking College. And then I went from Hocking College to finishing at the community college here, and then I ended up selling real estate. I took my real estate classes in my final elective and sold my first house in the first week, and that's how I got involved into doing luxury homes.
Huh, that's hilarious.
But
I'm not actually originally
from Ohio. I grew up in South Florida, so just my entire family is from the Ohio area.
Oh, that's crazy. You know, well, a lot of shit goes down in Florida too. That's a strange place, man. That is a oh God, what is his name? Lucky You. He wrote Lucky You. Oh, God, now grammatical decay. Oh, man, what is his name? He writes all these amazing books about Florida. Carl Hiaasen. Carl Hiaasen has these, like, great books about all this weird shit that goes down. He was very obsessed with Florida and the swampy sort of culture that goes on there. Lucky You is a great book about two brothers that, like, scandalize. Like, take advantage of this lottery winner. It's so crazy. It's so funny. They're like a paranoid militia group. It's really very interesting.
Definitely gonna love Florida.
You know, I enjoyed growing up there. There was definitely a culture shock moving from Florida to Ohio. It's a different lifestyle, especially in Northeast Ohio. It is what it is, but I'll be honest with you. I think I'm happy where I'm at, but I do get to travel a lot. I think we're actually mm-hmm. planning is we'll probably be out, and I think later on in the summer we're going to go investigate out in at the Roosevelt Hotel, and out
Hollywood.
By you. So
we did a kind of not so funny story.
During COVID, before COVID, we shot a documentary, and it was supposed to be edited and really well done. And because of COVID, that whole thing fell apart when it came to what we did with the production. And the production was actually not done to what we were. I don't know how much I want to say, but it wasn't what we were expecting, to say the least, with all the time and stuff that we put into it.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're going back to work with the people again. So,
yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. We totally enjoy them, and we enjoy shooting the production, and I loved it. It's just the fact that everything came to a halt, and for promotional purposes, they, from their end, wanted it released. And so they did their best putting it together. But they put it together a little bit different than we anticipated at the time and what we were all hoping for. So we'll be doing that again, hopefully soon. And kind of a redo. So I always tell people, this is amazing. You can check it out. Go see it here. Go see it there. I do the complete opposite. I'm like, yeah, we shot it. Don't go watch it. I'm not going to tell you where you can see it. There's nothing anywhere about it. Nothing on IMDb. Nothing. It's not non-existent. So, it's a complete opposite spectrum for us.
Yeah,
that's funny.
Even from the promotional tour we did was not memorable. So it's one of those that we had high anticipation. This could be something special, but.
We're hoping for the next one.
But anyway, we're going back for it. And if you're into it, you're more than welcome to join us for a night of paranormal investigating.
Yeah,
I'm down. I'm totally down.
Awesome.
We'll make a thing of it. I have friends that are doing some of those shows too, and they're actually on TikTok. So maybe we can figure something out for sure. It'll be fun. I'm into it.
That would be cool.
Yeah, and we kind of I started doing posting our stuff on TikTok when I was confined to a chair with my leg injury. I always thought it was just like kids dancing around. And I was like, you know, I thought it was kids dancing around. I'm like, I can't dance around even before my injury. So it wasn't, you know, suitable. But what my fear is always is that, you know, because we've been branded for almost, 15 plus years as Live Paranormal, that people use our, like, they're going to sign up for that username. So when I signed up for the username, I just, you know, put a couple of videos on and we had some good success. And then we had a couple months lull where we didn't post, and then we posted more stuff. But, you know, I started posting stuff again, and, you know, we're getting our numbers up there, and, you know, people are enjoying our footage. So, yeah, I like that. You know what, I like the platform's cool for us because we can sit there and just pop stuff up while we're in the middle of an investigation. But, you know, normally you have to sit and you have to pull the footage from your cameras and, you know, cut it and everything. But, you know, I could do like a secondary source with my phone or whatever. And, you know, and we can just sit and cut a couple seconds, put it up and, you know, watch the views come in as we're, you know, doing our stuff. So I do enjoy that part of it.
And you can also live stream it too, which is crazy.
That's right.
And it's good quality. It's amazing quality. It's you know, it's so funny. When I got into the film business, like, digital was just starting to be a thing, right? I've never actually shot an actual movie on film, like 35 millimeter film. And, you know, so everything was turning into digital. And it's so interesting to just see the advances in technology. It's like crazy. It's the things you can do nowadays. I mean, speaking as a filmmaker, and the ways that you can create and offer content is incredible these days. It's like you don't even need a computer, really. I mean, I've been dating a Gen Zer, and like, I don't even think she owns a computer. And I'm like, well, a PC is a type, not an actual – we called them PCs back in the day, but it's actually very specific. It's a Windows machine, but yeah, you use your iPad and your iPhone, and that's what you do. Okay, great, you know?
Right.
Yeah, it's like when I bought my kids' computers. They're like, what are you doing with a desktop computer? Like, what is this? What is this box?
Right.
Like, it's a desktop computer. Right. But, you know, just another thing to make me feel old, I guess. But, yeah, do you go live? Do you do live streaming? Because I know we've been doing some live streaming, and people love it.
I've done it once. Like, seriously, I did it twice actually. I did it once at CrimeCon and I did it once here in LA, and I was on for like almost 2.5 hours answering people's questions. I have to get more into it, just there's so much to do. And it's with the podcast, with the this, and you know, also the thing with the podcast is I have to work too on top of the podcast, because the podcast is like, it's a self-funded thing and it's a full-time job, not bringing in revenue yet. So it's like everything I'm doing is to build towards the podcast, and it's really all I want to do, but I still am working as a filmmaker, and I'm editing a documentary right now, and I'm working on other projects, and I just shot a bunch of commercials last week, and, you know, you're always doing stuff. And it's like, you got to keep the lights on, but then you got to do this. And so it's just like adding a live to it. It's like, oh my God, I'm just exhausted. I need to sleep. You know, and I like to stumble in life. And I definitely try to injure myself by mountain biking up on the mountains here and Santa Monica and swimming in the ocean and surfing, which is like the most impossible thing to do. And, you know, so yeah.
Well, and what I've noticed for us and with our content, it's like all planned. We'll have like a most amazing plan. Like, like we had this almost like the Geraldo Rivera type reveal, like the Geraldo Rivera type reveal in Gettysburg. We had people that were allowing us to dig one of the most historic basements in Gettysburg.
Yeah.
You know, where soldiers were buried and, you know, that were the wounded, and it was never been dug before. So we did like a metal detecting, and we had psychics come in and say that there was stuff, you know, buried down there. Big like amazing thing. And, you know, and then we got really good numbers, but then we went into like a cemetery in West Virginia and just went live on a whim, and we had the numbers were just as good. So I was like, why are we putting this much like effort into like building this huge thing when we could just go grab a camera with our phones
somewhere
and just
random.
Go live from a cemetery.
Right.
So from our standpoint, it's like the content, it does, I think, as long as people, like, get a little bit of a creepy feel and they, you know, like, it looks like they're sneaking. I always say sneaking around and she can't stand when I say stuff like that. Like, you know, that's the one thing in our podcast, which doesn't really come through, at, you know, at least with this show, because there's a serious element to, you know, our conversation is that, you know, the way we play off each other, I think I'm funny and she does not think I'm funny, you know, so that shows in a lot of our content and both when we do our, you know, reality TV stuff or our podcast. But, you know, as long as you have that and what I call sneaking around, and, you know, she's always like, I can't believe you call what we do sneaking around in the dark. But it's really what we do, and it's a good way to describe it because people love it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's funny. Hey, brother, let me tell you something. We think we're so funny and witty and cute, and they're just looking at us going, dude, you're so out of touch, bro.
Totally. He's still calling
you, you know,
he calls it the Ethernet, his electronic mail. I'm like, what the hell? I'm like, stop.
You start just, what, you know what happens? Like, once she tells me that it's, like, annoying and I can see the look on her face when I say something, then the light goes on. I know, like, I can't stop. You know, it's got to, I got to put years into, like, and then, like, a couple times I'll forget that that's, like, there's a trigger word that will irritate her, and I'm like, oh, I forgot to say that. But what it is you have to, like, you've got to have a couple, like, guys that like feel the same way, and then you guys have them like on our podcast, or you get to talk to them like once in a while, and then like they think they're funny and you think they're funny, then you guys like we think each other are funny, and then it, you know, it keeps you sane.
Right.
Yeah,
so that's what you have to do. Like once a year, my friend Dustin will probably come on, and we both think each other are super funny, and she finds us both annoying. So
the most painful show I have to do.
But it's like the one show that I'll look forward to that I can actually, like, you know, think I'm funny and actually, like, not be told I'm not, you know, so
that's funny.
I let you have that one. It's okay.
There's always that one time. I think that, and then the last time I did it, I was all hopped up on pain meds, and I think I almost bought a Lincoln online, which was like, she's like, I can't believe you're
during the show. Yeah.
During the show.
Yeah, during the show.
It was, that Matthew McConaughey did well with it, so I was like, maybe I should buy a Lincoln.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's a special.
But then at the end of the day, because, you know what, I ended up at the time, and, you know, not to talk about rambling on, I ended up getting a Cadillac, and I'll tell you why I got a Cadillac is because I acted with my bad leg. I had a handicap pass, and I was like, what car is better for a handicap pass than a Cadillac? Because I think like 80-90% of all Cadillacs are handicap passes. I think that's a statistic that I'm just making up, but it's somewhat accurate.
It's probably accurate, yeah.
I think I would have a hard time arguing with that, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what essentially what you're saying is also you have an old man's car.
Yes.
I tend not to think that.
You do. I told you, check the windows. It'll help.
Yeah. I went with the CTS, and I think the CTS is sporty, yet it
is.
That sounds like an old man.
You
just called it sporty.
Yeah,
oh.
I did go with my dad, because he bought one, too, and he's like 75. So I guess now that it's like starting to all come together.
There we go. Yeah. Keep talking.
He's having an awakening on air.
Yeah, the more that I talk about it, the more. Well, and I came to
the more you should just stop.
That I needed to, like, move on. But, like, right when I realized that, like, I no longer wanted the car, it was, like, right when every car went up, like, three times the price. So I was like, yeah, there's no point to make a move on a car now. Because some of the stuff I looked at was, like, I couldn't even believe the prices in today's market for used cars or even new cars. So.
Yeah.
But anyway, I digress from there.
Right.
But, you know, we're looking at, unfortunately, we're coming up on the full hour. So I think we'll have to do this again if, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's got to take, you got to be willing to as well. So.
Oh, I'm good with that. Absolutely. Now there's a delay, so I'm curious: is there a way that we can get on a non-delay, or is it?
Hello. I'm not sure.
There was a big delay.
It seems like I say something and then there's a delay, and then you guys.
Right. Yeah, that was a huge delay.
Did that just happen?
Manually?
Has it been like that?
Like you were like, let me think about this. Let me think about this.
Yeah,
right.
It takes me a long time to process. What I think it is too is what has happened is we have a virtual studio, and our virtual studio has a British lady that gives me all the feedback. And I think the feedback, because it was just the top of our show hour, it was playing through that.
Got it.
Yeah.
Because we have our system, our virtual system. What it does is it will give you time. You have 90 seconds left. Your time cues, you should be running an ad. Like whatever your time cues are. And it's been pumping those time cues and this stuff through my, earpiece here for the last 3 or 4 minutes.
Oh,
so they're like, hey, stupid, your time slot's over. But I'm like,
that's so funny.
So we air it live. For the first hour, and then anything that we go over the hour is then just in the post-production podcast.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So that's how we function. But then there is like that little bit of a delay where the show live and it kicks into the extended podcast version. So I think that's where we had the delay.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I've never noticed it before, and I appreciate you calling us out on it. Because now
yeah.
I know.
Oh, no, I was trying to call you out. So wait a minute, hold on. Now, did the show just end?
So it ended for our live audience, but it's in a tape mode. So it kicks into a tape mode.
So now we're in the after hours.
Yeah.
The after hours. So we can say anything we want now, and it could be taken off, or it could be left on.
Got it.
And I'll be honest with you.
There's much less of a delay now. That's interesting.
Yeah, it was
okay. Now it makes total sense.
Got it. Yeah, it's probably just in that. So I'm guessing from, since we're on Eastern time, that 11:29, or no, it's 11:28 to 11:31. That 3 minute gap will be where it shoots me constant notifications through my earpiece.
Yeah.
Interesting. There you go.
And normally we're in wrap up mode. We extended it, and let it. If our guest is interesting and we're enjoying the conversation, we'll keep it longer because we run the network and we buy the airspace.
Yeah, so we can do
so
it.
It's not like so we can do it. and then we always
interesting.
If something dumb happens, we're like, oh, we'll cut that out, and then we never cut it out because
yeah,
it's for good
do.
Radio
we
and on top of it. Yeah, kind of like you. We have other stuff going on where you're like, all right, we have.
We're like, we have the best intentions.
Like, oh,
yeah, we'll go back and do that. And then we're like,
you want to take the dumb stuff out, but then you're like, that's really funny, and people would really enjoy that. And it's like I always play around with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes it exactly. It's the authenticity. Well, I just I always walked outside of my balcony. And I'm looking at this beautiful sort of sunset happening over the mountains here, and it's pretty cool with the palm trees, I gotta say. I might have to snap a photo of that.
I don't know why, but it's kind of a... Oh, go ahead, sorry.
I was gonna say, when you guys come out here, you'll have to come to Santa Monica and check it out, too.
Go ahead.
No, I'm good. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh no, yeah. So we I think we're probably sometime in the beginning of August, the end of July. I've got to get it all sorted.
Yeah, I need those dates.
Apparently, there's the guy that we're going to be spending the majority of time with, and he's actually paying our way out to go out there and stuff. I think he's going on a tour or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he does music as well.
Mm. Oh, cool.
And,
we love that.
Yeah, it's really fun. So we shot a have you seen the movie The Lost Boys?
Oh, of course, yeah.
So we did a special. We took the Frog Brothers to Gettysburg,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
Now we're gonna head out to L.A. to do some stuff out there.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. Will you guys be out here?
I'm thinking end of July.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. I'll be here. I don't usually go anywhere. Well, I do. I go tons of places, but I should be around for sure.
I had a first time just now while on air. I had an Amber Alert interrupt everything. That was
an Amber Alert?
An Amber Alert just interrupted. Yeah. That's first time on air, Amber Alert. Okay.
Well, I'll leave you with one final little tidbit. It was kind of funny that you mentioned about going out to your balcony and overlooking, you know, being in California. We once did a radio show with this producer, and he had a similar, like, lead-in. And then he led into the fact that he walked out into his balcony, looking over, I guess, like, the desert or whatever, and he was in... I can't remember what the scenario was, but he said it was his nightly visit of the UFOs, and he was being serious. And then our whole conversation really took a turn for like the bizarre, because he was talking about how the UFOs visit him nightly, and we weren't anticipating any of this.
It was totally unexpected.
It's like, oh, they're back.
So,
and I'm like, what are you talking
about? That's
crazy. Yeah, the UFOs are back. Yeah,
that's
you can see
cool.
Over the dungeon, they come and visit me.
Yeah, that's cool. So my ex-girlfriend of many, many, many years ago, her father, who passed away the last couple of years, God rest his soul. He was a shaman in Costa Rica, and he had this property in the middle of nowhere on the coast, and
oh, wow.
It was a very like. Big vortex. And I don't know if you've ever been to Costa Rica, but Costa Rica has these weird phenomena. They have these giant, perfect stone spheres, and they're massive. They're massive. Like, probably at least, I would say, maybe eight feet in diameter. And they're stone, and they're perfect spheres, and they're at random places around Costa Rica. And I believe in Central America as well, but, like, they're most prevalent in Costa Rica. And, like, nobody can explain how they got there because they must weigh, like, tons. Like, how could you get a perfect sphere into, like, the middle of the rainforest? You know what I mean? Like a stone sphere. Like, where does that come from?
Right.
Like, there are many places in Costa Rica. And so I've been down there, and I've definitely seen aliens and things of that nature, like spirits and just some crazy shit, man. There's, all the Mayans are down there, and you have the, the Mayan calendar, the pyramids, like all this stuff that is very aligned with, celestial beings. It's super crazy. And so I can relate to that.
I find that stuff that's super interesting. When I had my broken hip, I lost my controller from my television for sort of like 4 straight days. I watched Ancient Aliens. I watched every single episode.
Oh my gosh.
It just was like Ancient Aliens was just on. So I'm well versed on like seasons 1 through 4 of Ancient Aliens and like the all the Ancient Alien theories, but only go up to, like, once it hits, like, season 5, then I don't have it. But, there's a lot of things that are super interesting that, like you said, like, how did you get that there? And I think the one that I found weird is, like, they found packing in some of the mummies of tobacco that was only found in Mexico, in Egypt. And they're like, in the time periods, like, where would... Like, apparently there was, like, a pipeline or somehow they traded or traveled, which would have been, like, not even a possibility back in that time, frame of when they existed.
Uh-huh.
And how that, like, rare tobacco, like, was kept showing up inside of the tombs in Egypt.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just, some of that stuff, you just can't figure it out. Like, there's no rational explanation.
Right.
That's like some American gangster. Right. Shit. Like, right? What was his name? Not Freeway, Ricky Ross. What was it? Ike Atkinson or something like that? We put the heroin in the body bags coming back from Vietnam.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about, or no? Am I, like, way off here? You ever see American Gangster with Denzel Washington?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He was trafficking heroin from Southeast Asia in body bags coming back to the United States of dead U.S. soldiers. That's how he made his fortune, getting heroin into the United States. So, and the tobacco, the mummy thing made me think of, like, were they doing, like, a smuggling thing that you said no.
Right.
That was, like, where my mind went.
Right.
They'll never suspect it. Right.
No, but I just don't know how it got there from,
right,
you know, that time period. But anyway, we'll definitely have to set this up again, and, you know, we enjoyed having you on.
For sure.
And I think we can actually just not have to edit this, so this is great. We'll leave this as an extended cut, and
you know,
people should enjoy the little bit of extra. You know,
my true crime story, and then we'll listen to it. They'll listen to us mostly talking about, like, injuries, Ohio University.
Right.
Random weirdness. But
yes.
Lost remote control.
Yeah.
You know, I put a tile on my remote control so it doesn't get lost. So I can just go on my phone and hit the tile thing and it beeps, and I'm like, oh, there it is. Because I got so tired of losing it.
I think it was just like
when I want to watch something, it's like I haven't watched it in 3 weeks, and I'm like, where did the remote go? What did I do with it? Oh, okay, here it is.
Right. He needs to get that.
whenever you're confined to, like, a chair for, like, weeks, and, you know, there's not much going on. So,
well, how far could it have gone if you were in the chair?
Oh, it was in the chair. That's the funny part. I just couldn't for myself to get it out of the chair. Yeah. I was, like, sitting on it for, like, six.
Oh,
I couldn't find it for, like, six days. I was just sitting on it. But we appreciate it. And, thank you for joining
us. Thank you. You got it, guys.
And I'm looking forward to meeting you in person. Let's do it.
Yeah, definitely. Awesome.
You got it. And if you ever make your way back up to Mansfield, you know, let us know too.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I try to come back at least once a year. I was hoping to come back over the summer, so we'll see, like, what my schedule is. But maybe when I finish this documentary and stuff, I can go back. That would be great.
Yeah, well, let us know. That would be cool.
You got it. That would be awesome.
Cool.
Awesome. All right, Rob, Nikki, thank you both so much for having me on the program. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.
We appreciate having you on
too.
And everything that you're doing. And, like I said, true inspiration.
Definitely.
Cool, man. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. All right, guys. Have a good night. Talk soon.
All right. You too.
Thanks. You too.
Bye.
Bye.
So that was fun. Which is
hard
to say after, you know, the premise of the show.
But he's got a purpose, you know, and he's used his story to, you know, for purpose. And I think it's amazing.
It is. And it's just like another example of, like, somebody who's gone through something that's been, like, super traumatic.
Right.
And I've been through something really, like, less traumatic, and yet I, like, try to use it as a crutch. Quote, unquote, crutch, because I talk about my legs.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things that, like, make you realize, like, man, you know, you think that you, had it rough and stuff, but that would be, his experience.
Right, and the fact that he
really
hasn't, like he said, he's been on go. He's been on, like, on go. Since then, you know, and that's just, like, wow, you know, a lot of people would it would hold them back. And it hasn't held him back at all. He used it to help others, and that's just absolutely fantastic.
Well, and it takes it past, like, I think it's going to pass a lot of the stories that we hear or we know of where, you know, we don't come across many stories like his. And it takes,
right.
like, everything to a new level. It's not just experiencing a loss of someone. It's, like, a loss
right.
of multiple people, a loss of, like, so many things. And, you know, I'm not
right.
one to sit and get into, like, I can't diagnose or say exactly, you know, what you lose when you have that type of experience or traumatic experience.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know,
right.
it's just, it takes everything to a new level. It's not just a singular
totally.
Loss, you know, which we
right.
come across all the time.
Uh-huh.
It's something that's much deeper and,
definitely.
You know, it takes somebody super strong to get through something like that.
Definitely.
I think, you know, we definitely enjoyed having him on, and
mm-hmm.
I look forward to having him on again and doing another true crime special.
Yes, definitely. I do too. And we definitely should, plan on meeting up when we're out there.
Or just start doing true crime and doing the paranormal thing as a special.
There
kidding.
You go. Hey, you never know.
I was just trying
Don't discount it. You never know.
It. Hey, I would make
you never
a
know.
Switch. You never know. All right,
you never
well, thanks
know.
Thanks, everyone, for listening and joining us on Live Paranormal Radio.
Yes, thank you, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.